Hi, this is Kirk LaPointe, managing editor of the Vancouver Sun, former editor-in-chief of the Hamilton Spectator, and therefore an honorary Hamiltonian. Please join us as we help CFMU continue to redefine radio in our community.
Welcome to Disrespect. Exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. On October 23rd, OCAP mailed us to tell us that in Vancouver and Victoria, the Anti-Poverty Committee of Vancouver occupied the North Star Hotel and followed that a day later with a squat in Victoria at the Janion Building. For those who want to know more information, we could not get through, but the number for the Anti-Poverty Committee, 604-682-3276, 604-682-3276. We have a story by a lawyer challenging the law against homelessness in Victoria, Catherine Boyes Parker.
Disrespect welcomes lawyer Catherine Boyes Parker from Victoria, BC, to talk about the challenge against outlawing outdoor homelessness in Victoria. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Kathy, you've been involved in this for about a year. It's been a year since you opened the file. When did this hit the court?
Well, when I say the case started about a year ago, what happened about a year ago was that some people in Victoria had set up a tent city, and the legal process started to go into action to dismantle the tent city. And they came to see us then, and we acted for them in their bid to resist the injunction to dismantle the tent city. And that's how it started a year ago. So
they came to your firm.
That's right.
Did you have a track record in advocacy for social causes?
We've done a lot of charter work, and we're pretty interested in sort of the impact of social policies on vulnerable people. It was a group of people who were homeless in Victoria, and they had at first set up a tent city at a place called St. Anne's Academy. And it's a place that has some very nice grounds. And there's government buildings there, but it's owned by something called the Provincial Capital Commission.
Oh, okay.
And so they had set up their tents there and were living there very peacefully, but the Provincial Capital Commission has bylaws, private bylaws, which prohibit overnight sleeping.
I understand they've been in force for a long time, too.
They've been in force for some time, yes. The City of Victoria bylaws have been in place for quite a long time as well.
Okay.
So the Provincial Capital Commission got an injunction to have the tent city taken down from their grounds, and we were not involved in that application. The the homeless people went themselves to court and tried to defend against the injunction, and
weren't successful.
Found that they didn't really have an opportunity to speak. The process wasn't really set up for them to be able to say their piece, so the injunction issued against them, and it was after that they came to see us.
Oh. So you were appealing an injunction?
We did not appeal that injunction. It wasn't something that we thought probably would get us anywhere. And what instead happened was the tent city moved across the street from St. Anne's to what is called Cridge Park, which is City of Victoria property.
Okay.
So then they were under the City of Victoria's jurisdiction and subject to the bylaws passed by the city.
Right. Was that under your advice?
No. They just made the decision to do that.
Okay.
But by then, we were providing them with some advice about what their legal rights might be. And we did write to the City of Victoria's lawyers and let them know if they were going to take any action against the campers, that we wanted to be informed of it.
Uh-huh.
So the tent city was up for several weeks there on City of Victoria property when the City of Victoria did seek an injunction to have it removed from that property as well.
I see.
We acted for the people, the residents of the city, some of them in any case, in resisting that injunction. We were not able to resist that injunction, and the judge held that he was bound by previous cases that had taken place in Victoria where injunctions had issued against similar tent cities, but he put a 10-month expiration date on the injunction.
Oh, when did it expire?
It expired last August.
Okay.
And I think the reason he did that was because we had made the point to him that what often happens in these cases is you have a tent city goes up, there's a constitutional issue raised when they try to resist an injunction. The injunction issues, everyone disperses, and the constitutionality of the underlying bylaws never gets determined.
Oh.
And so what we said to him was, you know, we want to have a chance to address this bylaw. So what we did was we asked the city to not just rest on their injunction, but actually start and, you know, continue with the action against our clients so that we would have an opportunity to challenge the bylaw, which they've done.
Why did they accede to your wish?
Well, I think because the judge had made it very clear that he wasn't satisfied with the manner of proceeding where you simply get the injunction, everyone disperses, and then no one gets to look at the underlying bylaw. He thought it was important that this matter be addressed, because it never has been addressed, to my knowledge, in Canada.
Right.
The constitutionality of these bylaws that prohibit sleeping outside has never been explored, although it has in the United States and several different jurisdictions.
Well, the injunction was against the tent city. How many people were involved?
Oh, you know, it changed every day.
Okay. Were there like dozens?
More than that, I would say.
Okay.
The latest homeless count, which is a couple of years old now, in Victoria, and, you know, these, as you probably know, these counts can be notoriously conservative in their estimates.
Yeah.
But the latest count estimated that there were between 700 and 1,000 homeless people in Victoria, and there are, depending on the time of year, between 100 and 176 shelter beds.
Oh.
So there's an enormous discrepancy between the amount of homeless people and the amount of available shelter.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, some of the shelters which are available are not suitable in many ways. There's not really proper shelter available for people under 18, very limited space for women, no space for married couples. So
very limited space for women.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a shame, because I would imagine women probably, if an appropriate survey were done, they'd probably find that women were the neediest of shelter.
And certainly, you know, in the last few years, the amount of women who are homeless and the amount of young families who are homeless has increased substantially.
It's happened in Ontario, too.
Yeah. And, you know, it was the women, I think, who got really the most benefit out of the tent city. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with sort of the tent cities and what happens there, but
only what I read in the news.
Yeah. Well, you know, it makes a real difference in sort of the sense of security and safety and stability. If people have a place to put all their things,
yeah,
and they have some continuity in who they're with, and the women,
even if it's only a tent,
that's right. And you know, the numbers, I think, help the women feel much safer. If it's a choice between sleeping in an alley yourself or in a tent city with a lot of other people around,
yeah,
it makes a huge difference.
So the injunction was issued against the tent city. Why did the city act why did Victoria act in the interest of the tent city by pursuing their action further? Why didn't they just laugh and sit back on their laurels and let the judge try and bring this thing to a head?
Well, as I said, I think that the judge made it clear that he wanted to see the constitutionality of the bylaw tested.
So the implication was they weren't going to get anywhere unless they pursued it.
That's right. And I think if they had not done this, I mean, it would have been open to us to bring an action for a declaration with respect to the constitutionality of the bylaws. But it's really one that's more properly brought as a defense, because it was the city who engaged the legal process here. It was they who started sort of the machinery of the state in enforcing the bylaws.
The machinery of the state.
Yeah, it's much more appropriate that it's brought as a defense. Having said that, we still haven't received the city's documents, so we'll see how the litigation progresses.
So what documents are you anticipating, I mean, in lay terms?
Well, you know, when a lawsuit begins, you get to have discovery of all the relevant documents, and I'm hoping to see what sorts of documents the City of Victoria has regarding certainly its enforcement of the bylaws as well as its efforts to address the homeless problem.
So these would be historical documents mainly about past cases and so forth?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would expect so.
So when do you think it goes ahead?
Well, our trial is currently scheduled for next September. That was the earliest date that we could all agree on.
11 months.
Yeah. Now, hopefully, we may be able to find a way to shorten the trial, and we might be able to get it on sooner than that. But that's what we're set for right now.
Again, that's odd because, I mean, these people have a place to stay until the trial takes place, and you're arguing to shorten it.
They don't have a place to stay.
Are they off the site?
The bylaw is still in force and is being enforced all the time. There is nowhere where anyone can sleep outside in Victoria without being subject to the enforcement of the bylaw.
So is this tent city being harassed?
It's been taken down.
Oh.
No, it was dismantled last October when the injunction issued.
Oh. I didn't realize that.
Yes, sorry. No, last October, as I said, we went to court. We tried to resist the injunction.
And it was successful. And I didn't realize it was followed by, like,
that's
the
right,
pursuit of action literally meant dismantling the orders.
And, you know, it was a very difficult position because, you know, they say you have to take down the city, you have to leave, take down the tents, you have to leave the park. Where should we go? There was nowhere where they could go in Victoria.
Well, isn't that the basis? That's the basis of your challenge, you can't outlaw something that's necessary to survive.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That essentially what you're doing is outlawing the state of being homeless, because if you are homeless, there's no place for you to sleep inside, so you're going to be sleeping outside.
Right. You mentioned that this had taken place in the States and had been constitutionally challenged. What have been the outcomes in the States?
There have been a number of challenges. One was in Miami. One most recently was in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been others, I believe, in San Francisco and perhaps in Portland. And the results have been somewhat mixed, but I think it's safe to say that whenever you have a total prohibition on sleeping outside in public spaces, it has been held to be unconstitutional. And basically on the same grounds that you can't make it illegal for someone to do something that they have no choice whether or not they're going to do it.
I see.
Now, of course, the structure is different in the States, the constitutional rights at issue, but that's essentially the argument which has been accepted.
Our rights here are not the same, but our rights here are similar, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, and we've raised a number of bases to make our arguments under the Charter, but the main ones are Section 7 of the Charter and Section 15. Section 7 provides that everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, and not to be deprived of that except in accordance with the principles of fundamental justice. So we say that prohibiting people from sleeping outside and putting them in jail if they sleep outside or subjecting them to a process which may end up with them in jail is an infringement of the security of the person. And their liberty.
Yeah.
And given that they have no choice about whether or not to do it, that's not consistent with the principles of fundamental justice, because it is a fundamental understanding of Canadian law that you don't punish people for something that they can't help, and you don't punish people simply for their status of being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
The other argument is under Section 15, the equality provision of the Charter, and their argument is essentially, you know, although this prohibition on sleeping outside may apply to everyone, it obviously has very special and disproportionate impacts on people who are homeless.
Yeah.
Now, homelessness has not previously been recognized as a protected ground under Section 15 of the Charter, but we're going to argue that it should be recognized as an analogous ground.
So homelessness will be recognized, as you say, as an analogous ground, analogous to the other conditions, the other identified conditions.
That's right. The enumerated grounds in Section 15 include, you know, sex and race, and the courts have said you can't discriminate on those bases, and you also can't discriminate on grounds which are analogous to those, such as citizenship or sexual orientation, and we'll say homelessness.
Is poverty recognized as
it
analogous?
It has not been successfully recognized yet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You're listening to CFMU 93.3 FM while we take a short break from our interview. Thank you. You're listening to a story by a lawyer challenging the law against homelessness in Victoria, B.C., Catherine Boyce Parker.
And when you do this, and you're successful, you've established a precedent. You've established a federal precedent across Canada. Other than the goodwill of cities not wishing to challenge the federal precedent, how will it be enforced, your win?
Well, the court will have before it the City of Victoria's bylaw, and we'll ask the court to hold that because the bylaw is contrary to the charter, it's of no force and effect. So it will there'll be a declaration, we hope, issued that the bylaw is of no force and effect. Now, this decision will not be binding anywhere else in Canada, and of course there won't be a ruling with respect to similar bylaws. But
which will probably be constructed with an eye to avoiding this ruling.
That's right. They could try to do that. But, you know, we would argue that one of the other bases that will bring our arguments is that right now there's no relationship between the activity that's being prohibited and any substantial harm.
That's true.
And, you know, it's
they will argue that, of course, they're damaging things like property values and tourist revenues.
Well, some people would, you know...
Am I right, though?
Well, they may.
Yeah.
They may argue that, but it's not necessary, I don't think, to have an absolute prohibition on all outdoor sleeping in order to protect those values.
Yes, I agree.
So, and that's something that, you know, the principles that are at play in this case will have application across Canada. And, you know, what we hope to do is make sure that the City of Victoria and hopefully other cities understand that their responsibility is to address problems of homelessness. And there's a wide variety of ways that they can do that. That's a political decision that the courts aren't going to interfere
right.
with.
Right.
What they're going to say is the one way that you can't address it is just by making it a criminal act.
Is Victoria like, say, an Ontario city of the same size where there's been a download from the province and social housing is a municipal expense? Or does this now involve indirectly the province as well in providing funding for housing?
I think that the city will argue that it's very dependent on provincial monies in order to provide social housing. And, you know, if the city would like to add the province to the lawsuit, then that would be fine. Right now we're challenging the city's bylaw
right.
and saying, given that this is the environment, the economic and social environment which is out there, you can't have this bylaw.
Yeah.
We do also make the argument that under Section 7 of the Charter, there's a positive obligation on the state to provide adequate housing.
Mm-hmm.
Canada is party to numerous international agreements. With
UN agreements, among others, yeah.
Yeah. And now, whose responsibility that is, whether it's the federal government, the provincial government, the municipal government, is out of some debate, I guess. But we will also be making the argument that there is a positive obligation there. And even if the courts can't direct the city to fulfill that in a certain way, they can say as long as the city's failing to fulfill it, it can't, as I said, take this route of making it criminal.
So the productive outcome is an upward pressure. The city says, look, we have this obligation and we don't have the money. And the province says, well, we'd like to give you the money, but we don't have the money either. And probably eventually the federal government is put upon to provide this money and can choose to adopt it as policy or can choose to adopt it as some kind of public safety measure or something like that to provide the money, maybe not even explicitly for homeless, but provide no strings money to the provinces. Is that an outcome that's hoped for?
I mean, the outcome that we're hoping for is that the city takes its responsibilities to its most vulnerable residents seriously. The way that that happens, as I said, there's a lot of different ways that could happen through provincial money, federal money, private money. There's probably a lot of creative solutions. If people were motivated and committed to follow through with them, it's not an insoluble problem.
People don't seem to accept that broad demographic of homeless people and the demographic seems to be growing broader. As you mentioned, young families, women, and I'm sure if personally, if you went into the tent city and hung around for a week, you'd probably come across a PhD people don't appreciate this, do they?
I think that's right. I think that, you know, people don't have a real human face for the homelessness problem. A lot of the homelessness is hidden. A lot of the people that you might see in the most obvious places on the street may conform to sort of people's stereotype of the average homeless person being a, you know, a male, younger male. But a lot of the families that are struggling with homelessness are not as obvious. One of the interesting things that's happened here in Victoria is that the homeless count is conducted with a lot of volunteer help. And, you know, the people who have participated in that have found it to be a wonderful experience because they learn so much about who's on the street and you know, their respect and regard for the people that are on the street is always heightened by the experience of getting to know the people that are actually there.
So this census that's taken is, in fact, itself a tool for addressing homelessness because it's a form of education and awareness.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Is there something that you would like to say to this issue that we haven't covered in the past 20 minutes?
Well, I think that it's just, it's, you know, one of the people who write about homelessness from the legal perspective is named Jeremy Waldron.
What's his last name?
Waldron.
Okay, W-A-L-D-R-O-N.
That's right.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he talks about is why do people have a negative reaction to seeing homeless people on the street?
Oh.
And this is something that, you know, we dealt with in the injunction. Is why is this distasteful to people to see the homeless people on the street? And is this really detracting from the public's ability to enjoy their public parks? And by the way, there was no evidence that anybody was complaining about the homeless people except for some businesses were concerned about possible impacts. But in terms of citizens using the park, there were no evidence of any complaints.
Really? Mm, good.
But one of the important things to think about is when we see people who are homeless, we often have a feeling of distress.
Yeah.
And it's important to understand what that feeling of distress is. We naturally feel that because when we see someone who's having difficulties, we have a compassionate response and we want to help them.
Right.
And that's a good response.
Right.
By making homelessness illegal, what we're saying is, I don't want to have to look at that.
Right.
And we think that that's going to make us feel better. That's not going to make, that shouldn't make anyone feel better to say, if I don't look at it, I won't have this difficult response. What you should do is you have the response and then you do something about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And just sweeping it under the rug and putting it where we can't see it doesn't solve the problem. The reason we have a feeling of compassion is because we're meant to do something. So rather than try and sweep it away where we can't see it, we all have to think about ways that we can do something.
All right. We're coming up to municipal elections in Ontario. If we wanted to flush out closet opponents of the homeless who haven't declared their willingness to pass such a law, but are merely waiting to be elected to do such a thing, what are the questions to ask?
Well, I don't know. That's getting into an area where I have very little expertise.
Yeah. Well, people aren't really a lot different here than they are there, except they're probably a little more concerned about money and a little more impatient than they are in Victoria. But the questions will probably be the same in both cases. Anyway, I put that to anyone listening. Your job, listening, come up with the questions for your candidates and make sure that you're not electing someone who's going to make life even harder for a family that's homeless. Catherine, I really appreciate your time now out of your lunch hour for talking to us about this precedent-setting case in BC, and I hope we hear more about it and that you're successful.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a story by a lawyer challenging the law against homelessness in Victoria, BC, Catherine Boyes Parker. At the middle of the show, you heard Gene Rogers and the GR Boogie. And at the end of the show, Sammy Price, Untitled Boogie Woogie. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.